Welcome in to the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. You know, folks, the name of the show, in full, as you may know, is Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We've been around for 17 years. It'll be 18 years in January. One of the things, and I find this interesting, our topic today is, of course, on the demonic, is a topic that's very dark. And I don't want to lead our guest astray. Dr. Richard Gallagher is our guest today. He's a board-certified psychiatrist who's dealt in the demonic for many, many years. A lot of our guests sometimes, when they come on the program, they come on the program and they think, well, Darkness Radio, does this have to do with the demonic? It absolutely does not. We delve into all sides of the paranormal and of the strange and unusual. I find the show fascinating today, and I'll tell you, folks, we're going to hit things from a certain perspective, and I automatically warm up to Dr. Gallagher because we are coming at things from both a Catholic and a Jesuit perspective. There's been some training on Dr. Gallagher's part, and he's trained with some of the finest in exorcists, and so we're going to get things straight from the horse's mouth today. And he's seen some things, I'll tell you, in his new book, Demonic Foes. He's seen some things. I encourage you to go out and get this book that will absolutely curl your hair and terrify you. Having read this book over the weekend, I'll tell you, I was astonished. And having done this show for 17 years, that's saying a lot. That's saying a lot. I want to bring our guest in now, and let's get to it, and let's get to the conversation. Dr. Richard Gallagher is a board-certified psychiatrist, a professor of clinical psychiatry at New York Medical College, and a faculty member of the Psychoanalytic Institute of Columbia University. He's a Phi Beta Kappa Magna Cum Laude graduate of Princeton University and a winner of the Stinnicky Class Prize, a scholarship award in classic Latin and Greek. He's trained as a resident in psychiatry at the Yale University School of Medicine and in private practice in Valhalla, New York. Over the past 25 years, Dr. Gallagher has consulted for hundreds of ministers, priests, and rabbis, and clergy of other faiths, too, as well as numerous mental health professionals on the subject area of this book, Demonic Foes. He has published and lectures widely on the topic of diabolic possession from the medical perspective and the critical need to differentiate such very rare cases from the much more common instances of people with mental or medical illness. Let's welcome in to Darkness Radio, Dr. Richard Gallagher. Dr. Gallagher, thank you so much for being on Darkness Radio today.
Well, thank you for the invitation, Tim.
I tell you right off the bat, I am very impressed with your book. And I don't say that lightly. I've read a lot of books over the years on possession. I've read a lot of books over the years on the demonic. And I've dealt with a lot of exorcists and exorcism topics over the years, both on video and on film and on television shows. And there's a lot of hyperbole around the demonic. And I'll tell you, first of all, when I delve into your book, there's no such thing as hyperbole here. It's very much from a very conservative perspective. And I'm glad that you bring right away to the book the fact that you're separating any hyperbole from the demonic with a very healthy dose of skepticism, a very healthy dose of medicine and psychiatry with it. To that, I tip my hat to you. With that being said, I do want to ask you right off the bat here. You're approached by an exorcist, Father Jacques, and I want to ask you right off the bat here, when you get into the field of exorcism, what is your first thought as a man of science and a man of medicine? Do you automatically jump into it and think with a skeptical mind, well, is this really something I want to get into? Or is this something that you think, well, you know, as a man who does have a little bit of a religious background, it intrigues you?
Well, I have to admit that I was intrigued. You know, my main motivation is as a physician. So when people ask me for my help, I try to be of help, including to suffering people. So I had finished my residency in psychiatry at Yale, And I was aware, Tim, of what they called the satanic panic at the time.
Mm-hmm.
This is when there were a lot of people claiming there were Satanists all over the place. They claimed that 50,000 kids a year were being kidnapped by Satanists. I mean, I knew very well that there weren't 50,000 missing children in the whole United States, and that most of those were runaways. So I had a certain skepticism about a certain amount of the claims of Satanism and that sort of thing. So sort of out of the blue, when this priest exorcist, at a time when there were very few priest exorcists in the United States, came to my office. I was at Cornell Medical College at the time. And he said, "Dr. Gallagher, there's a woman who's visited me from 2,000 miles away. She wants my help. I would be interested if you're willing to evaluate her, because we try to be careful with these individuals. We want to make sure that, you know, her story is credible and that she doesn't have some kind of odd psychiatric or medical disease to describe what's going on with her." And I said, "Well, Father, with all due respect, you know, I am willing to see this woman. On the other hand, I have to tell you, you know, I just finished my psychiatric residency and I'm a little skeptical of a lot of these wild stories." And I remember he said to me with a smirk, "Well, then, Dr. Gallagher, you're the perfect man for the job." Because believe it or not, he wanted someone who was skeptical. And I go into each case remaining somewhat skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, this woman eventually told a very credible story about being beaten up by evil spirits. We did all kinds of tests. She had bruises. We checked her platelets. We sent her for x-rays and to a hematologist. And I had to admit to myself as well as to the priest that there just was no medical or psychiatric explanation for what was going on, and that she appeared to be a very credible witness and reporter of this strange story of being beaten up by invisible forces, seen by other people as well. And I said, "Yeah, well, I can't find a scientific, and I am definitely a man of science. I can't find a scientific explanation here." And he said, "Well, thank you, Dr. Gallagher. That's what I assumed. I wanted to make sure. This is what we call a case of oppression." So this woman wasn't possessed. She was what terminology differs, but she was what most people in American Catholic circles who get involved in this sort of work call an oppression. And after that, this priest showed me a tremendous amount of other cases. He and a close colleague of his, who I call Father A in the book, because that was a pseudonym he used about myself.
Mm-hmm.
They were one of the few official exorcists in the United States. So I wound up seeing a tremendous amount of these cases, false cases as well as genuine, authentic cases of oppression and possession. And I probably have wound up seeing more of these cases than any doctor in the world. And perhaps because of electronic communications, as we're using today, perhaps any physician in history.
And it's
something I never really, Tim, volunteered for. I'm not sure it's a good idea to volunteer for this type of field, but everything I've done in the field has sort of been voluntary, you know, something that I've been asked to do to help people. And I'd like to think probably it's a little more providential that way.
Let's expound on that for a second, Dr. Gallagher. You say it's probably not a good idea to volunteer for that. Expound on that for a second. Why is it not a good idea to volunteer for it?
Well, you know, I honestly believe we are dealing with dark forces. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've interviewed literally hundreds of people in my life who have gotten involved for various reasons in some way in this field, and they often have payback. of some sort from that realm. I mean, it sounds superstitious, and I'm not a superstitious person, and I don't believe that your average person has to be worried that all of a sudden they're going to have a serious attack. I have a friend who consults with a lot of the Hollywood people who get involved in paranormal investigations. Mm-hmm. And he tells me himself that a lot of these people develop different sorts of problems and mm-hmm. that they have to be careful. So that's what I'm talking about. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not overly concerned about getting into this field, but I have seen some damage done to some people.
You bring up a good point, and I can only bring up from my perspective. I have a close friend who was an exorcist, Father Andrew Calder, who's passed away now. He was a type one diabetic. I've seen him. He was featured on Paranormal State in the IM6 episodes.
Was he a Catholic priest?
No, not Catholic. I'm trying to think of the best way to describe his ordination. I'm trying to think of the best way to describe his death, because it wasn't pretty. He died of complications of that diabetes as well, but at the end his feet turned black. It's almost like when the way to describe what you're describing here, the complications that happen, and I've heard of this of priests who and holy men who do exorcisms. They say it shortens the lifespan. And I want to ask you this question. Have you heard this in particular, that of men that go out and try to serve the public by doing these exorcisms, that they do suffer from some of these complications, as I'm going to call them, or some of the payback, as you've put it so eloquently? Do you find that happens to them?
Because I think there's a lot of variety. This friend, priest of yours, of course, he had diabetes, so, you know, he might have had gangrene of his extremities.
He did, yes.
That could have simply been a natural explanation. I know many exorcists. In fact, there's a prominent exorcist right in your town, right in your diocese, as we would say. And they're often delightful people. They have to have a sense of humor. They're often chosen precisely because they're holy and mature men. And I don't think there's a lot of, you know, suffering on their part. Mm-hmm. I do think that inexperienced people who get into this field, I have observed some of them, again, not so much exorcists, but other people who have gotten in over their head with this stuff. They may start to get involved with some type of occultism, and then they find that they do pay a heavy price. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the whole idea that gives rise to the phrase, a Faustian bargain. I mean, I even write about in the book a woman who was a Satanist, and she actually liked being a Satanist for different reasons. She was one of these rare real deals. And again, I've already emphasized that I don't see Satanism everywhere. And you have a lot of conspiracy theories, even in the United States now, about Satanists running the government and all that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I don't buy those conspiracy theories. But having said that, this woman was absolutely high priestess in a rare satanic cult, and she felt she got a lot out of doing that. I mean, you know, people sometimes think, well, why would people be so stupid as to do that? But they believe that they're in genuine contact with dark powers, and they believe they get something out of it, just as most people who have done nefarious things like human sacrifices in history also believe that they get something out of it. On the other hand, eventually she found that she was possessed. And so she realized that there is a price to pay. And so I use that as a particularly dramatic and flamboyant example of the false bargain that some people suffer from their involvement in the occult, but also people who are a little too curious about this stuff and go into this field without what I would say is some spiritual protection.
Right.
I mean, yeah. I wouldn't do this field myself. I wouldn't get involved in this field myself. No, I'm not an exorcist. I'm basically a scientific advisor. I'm the longest standing member of the International Association of Exorcists, which is based in Europe. But it's as a scientific advisor. Even that, though, Tim, I wouldn't do if I didn't have my own spiritual life, and actually if I didn't have people praying for me. Mm-hmm. So I think people need that type of protection without being overly, afraid of getting involved, or without being overly superstitious about it. Whereas I think people who go into this field kind of naive, just out of curiosity, they do sometimes pay a price. It's interesting, when the original Exorcist movie came out, which I'm sure you've seen.
Oh, yes. Yep.
Won several Academy Awards, although not for Best Picture, but it actually was based not on a young girl, but it was based on a teenage boy from Maryland. And as they were filming the movie, this is, again, public knowledge. You could sort of Google this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of bad things happened to people. In fact, the house where it was being filmed in, I think, Georgetown, had a fire, and a number of people had other mishaps. Mm-hmm. So, again, we're dealing with true malevolent entities, which I believe are fallen angels who have chosen to rebel against God. And they sometimes do exact a price from people who they regard as their enemies or their pawns.
I want to get back in a little bit after the break. I want to get into some specific cases. One of which you'd already talked about, that young woman who had gotten into a satanic cult. We'll talk about that after the break. I want to talk a little bit first about some of the people you've met along the way. You had a brief meeting with Father Malachi Martin. I want to get your impressions about Father Martin. He has been a little bit of a, let's just say, controversial figure. I know at one time Art Bell had him on his program and talked to him briefly. What were your impressions of Father Martin?
Well, I only met him a couple of times. In many ways, he was sort of a impish-looking guy with a heavy brogue, and he was charming and delightful. He seemed to have a lot of knowledge about the field. He had been brought in by the person I call Father Jacques. All these names I use in the book are pseudonyms, although all the other facts are absolutely 100% accurate. Otherwise, mm-hmm. Trust me, I wouldn't have written the book. Mm-hmm. Unless 100% accurate. I like Father Martin. He very erudite man. His life was a little controversial, and I do think, without getting into that, I do think he I don't say he exaggerated himself, but he was not quite a prominent exorcist. He often assisted at cases. He actually emphasized what we were talking about before, this sort of melodrama between the priest and the evil spirit in the possession. And he kind of set up this dramatic way of looking at it, that it took its huge toll on the priest and caused a lot of suffering. I actually have not found that to be the case.
Okay.
Most priests that I work with, and I know an awful lot of the major exorcists all around the world, at least Catholics, you know, they're often very delightful people. I don't say they have easy lives, but I don't think they think of this as this cosmic battle between the priest and the exorcist, in part, Tim, because they don't see themselves as really delivering the case. They see our Lord. Mm-hmm. So what is exorcism? It's essentially prayers to our Lord to deliver the people. And these are usually very faith-filled people, mm-hmm. and often, surprisingly, very happy people. So I think that Martin, you know, maybe to sell his book, and, you know, it's kind of an interesting book. There are people who felt that it was a little stereotype, that he might have used a little poetic license. I think at somewhere, and I never was able to pin down the quote, but somebody told me that he also believed that 50% of people in psychiatric asylums were possessed. Now, I cannot tell you how strongly I disagree with that.
Yeah.
You know, part of my job is to differentiate genuine possessions from mental illness. And I think that is a way in which his thinking was a little off. So, again, a genuine, brilliant man, but that doesn't mean that every brilliant man is correct.
You also have an interesting quote in the book that you believe that more people in most cases are oppressed and there are very few possessions. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, possession itself is extremely rare. I mean, some of it depends on how you define it and what are the boundaries. But if you talk about an evil spirit, and I've seen a lot of these cases, not because they're common, but just because I've seen cases all over the world. But these cases where the demon actually, you know, takes control of the person's body, mm-hmm. not their soul, can speak through them, puts them in a trance, etc. I would call that a complete possession. Those are rare.
Okay.
And anybody who's seeing a lot of possessions all over the place is simply mistaken, often fundamentalist. These other types of attack, which vary greatly, shorter possessions, which in the book I call oppression. Other people use different terms like harassment or vexation and things like that. I don't say that they're common, but they are much more frequently occurring than possessions. No question about it.
Okay. Doctor, I'm curious what your thought is about modern day paranormal television and whether people are dealing with such a thing as earthbound spirits, or are we really dealing with a lower level demonic force? You see things on television such as people who are having problems in their homes. Like they see things like, you know, they hear knocks on walls, or they hear, you know, something walking around their home, or maybe they get a scratch on themselves, or they might see things falling off a bookshelf, things like that. Do you believe that those are a lower level demonic force, or do you believe there's such a thing as, or, you know, if you're picking up a thing like such as an EVP, a voice on a recorder, do you believe that's a lower level demonic force, or is there such a thing as a human being that can be trapped between, let's say, here in heaven?
Well, let me take a step back and just go over what are called the extraordinary attacks of demons.
Okay.
And they vary tremendously in severity. So there are these possessions, there are oppressions. And then what you're referring to in a lot of these shows is what we would call infestations, mm-hmm. Latin infestatio. And these are where there are strange attacks on sort of locales, mm-hmm. noises, appearances, wrappings, things like that. When it gets to the point of actually a scratch on somebody, that's what we would call a type of oppression. So recognizing those distinctions, which the church has differentiated for centuries, what causes that? My own view is that if things are being caused by something non-material. You know, call it a ghost, call it a spirit. These are evil spirits. I mean, any spirit that is causing harm, even just scaring people, is a type of evil spirit.
Okay.
So, I also am on the faculty, by the way, of a Catholic seminary. Mm-hmm. I give a mm-hmm. course in this subject. So what we tend to believe, those of us who are heavily involved in this field from a Catholic point of view, or Christian point of view, I would say, tend to believe that most of these harmful experiences are caused by demons. Now, is it possible that some people think there can be some type of deceased human who appears to people? You know, we would regard them as in some kind of an afterlife, maybe even possibly purgatory. I think it's very hard to prove it, though, and that's why there's such debates about it to this day. I certainly think that there are saintly figures, for instance, or deceased relatives who maybe are in heaven and occasionally appear to people to comfort them, such and such. So while there is a variety of possibilities here about people seeing apparitions and that sort of thing, it's a whole nother subject for another show, maybe.
Sure.
When these spirits scare people and harm people, I generally think those are demons.
Okay. Do you feel that the presentation of something like, or, you know what, I'm gonna change that question around. Do you feel like having a group of paranormal investigators, I'll put that in air quotes, our audience obviously can't see that, a group of lay people, paranormal investigators, going into a situation like that where it could be a potential demon is more harmful than good, having a lay person go in there and try and solve that situation rather than someone who's of the church or of some sort of training that could dispel that particular spirit is more harmful than good?
Well, number one, I think a lot of those people are confused what they're dealing with.
Okay.
Number two, I do think they possibly put themselves at some danger. Number three, I think they just usually achieve no real results, and they often just confuse their audience. The term paranormal, in my opinion, is pseudoscientific. You know, it's a modern term, mm-hmm. as you probably know.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's describing what people throughout Western history, at least, have generally ascribed to one of two realities, either supernatural realities or what's called preternatural, meaning beyond nature. And we usually think these preternatural phenomena are diabolic. Even though I also believe, I'm a great lover of history, I studied classics at Princeton,
mm-hmm.
I was impressed that all throughout history, people have basically believed in evil spirits. When people say to me, Tim, well, how does it feel to be a psychiatrist out of the mainstream? I say, what mainstream are you talking about? Most Americans believe in demons. Most people in the world today, my book, for instance, sells in Japan. It was translated into Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Most people in Asia and around the world believe in evil spirits, and certainly most people in evil in human history. So I say to people, I'm not sure I'm out of the mainstream. Maybe if you're a modern skeptic and materialist, maybe you're out of the mainstream. But it is also true that throughout history, people have given different explanations for who these evil spirits are. You know, in Jewish folklore, they're called dibbiks, or, you know, kind of malicious dead souls. In pagan religions, they're often believed to be ancestors or other types of spirits like jinn in Islam. And throughout a lot of pagan history and, you know, pre-Christian, basically the whole world was pagan. These demonic entities have often pretended to be, as actually some of the more astute Jewish thinkers understood even before the appearance of Christ. These deities were probably kind of worshipped and acting as evil spirits. This is why, precisely why people believed in this type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the Delphic Oracle would go into a possessed state and would say, this is Apollo talking, and would often be the repository of very striking, accurate knowledge, which attracted prominent figures from all over the world. So what was happening with this peasant girl who, you know, was being used as a pawn? We believe that she was possessed and that a demon pretending to be Apollo would speak through her. And in case people find this too wild or superstitious an idea, I always tell the story of a guy who was kind of a neo-pagan, and he came to my office and he was possessed. Again, these are not patients of mine, Tim. I just consult on these people.
Okay.
He literally said to me, I said, well, what does your possessing spirit call itself? And he says to me, Dr. Gallagher, he claims to be Zeus. And he said to me, do you want to speak to Zeus? I respectfully declined. I do not make a habit of speaking to these spirits.
Mm-hmm.
But he was absolutely convinced that Zeus was possessing him. Now, again, I've already mentioned that, of course, I evaluate these people. I make sure they're not psychotic. I make sure they're not just lying or manipulative or imaginative. This person was later delivered, and the spirit had to identify itself. That's part of the process. And admitted that it had been lying, that it was Zeus, and it had been, you know, just pretending as an evil spirit to fool people. So what I would say is, wild an idea as it is, a lot of times demons have lied and confused people throughout history by pretending to be something else. In a exorcism, a successful Christian exorcism, for instance, the demon is eventually forced to reveal that, in fact, they are a demon. I had another woman who claimed that angels were appearing to her, and she was skeptical. She later claimed that dead souls were appearing to her, and I had sent it to a priest to help her deal with this, and eventually she came back to me and said, Dr. Gallagher, you know, you were right that they finally admitted that they're demons and the priest is helping me get rid of them. Hmm. So I think there's quite sound evidence that throughout history, evil spirits have pretended to be a lot of other things, but tend to be exactly what the churches teach, that they are fallen angels.
You've brought up an interesting point.
That's my viewpoint, Tim.
I understand that, Dr. Gallagher, and I respect that viewpoint. You've brought up an interesting point here, though, Dr. Gallagher. I want to take our break here. When we come back, you've started to teeter into an area that I want to touch on that's in the book, and I want to bring it up with you and see what you think. And I want to get into the area of psychics, mediums, and whether that teeters on, is it actually a demon contacting these people, or is it an actual gift from God? I want to hold on that point. When we come back, I want to talk about that, because there's a little bit of a gray area as I see it, and I want to get your opinion on it. And when we come back, we'll talk about that. Psychics and mediums, and who are they contacting? We'll talk about that when we come back. Our guest is Dr. Richard Gallagher. The book is Demonic Foes, My 25 Years as a Psychiatrist Investigating Possessions, Diabolic Attacks, and the Paranormal. When we come back, psychics and mediums, who are they contacting? It's coming up next on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Our guest is Dr. Richard Gallagher. The book is Demonic Foes, My 25 Years as a Psychiatrist Investigating Possessions, Diabolic Attacks, and the Paranormal. We have a link in the description of this program. Go ahead and click on that link right now and get yourself a copy. It is a very fascinating book. Had a chance to spend some time with it this weekend and read through it. I tell you, folks, very, very fascinating book. Dr. Gallagher, before the break, I was teasing that we were going to talk a little bit about psychics and mediums and who exactly are they contacting. Now, in the book, you talk a little bit about Edgar Casey. I've got Edward Van Halen on the brain. He's right over my left shoulder. Edgar Casey, I do have a friend who is a psychic and claims to be Catholic. Okay. So I know that kind of makes you cringe a little bit inside. I don't claim to know that. I'm not psychic. Now, I can see a little, wince a little bit. We're on Zoom. With that, Dr. Gallagher, I have to ask you, first of all, of your opinion and where you would stand a little bit professionally on this. When we talk Edgar Casey, we talk about his visions. We talk about where he potentially got those visions. First of all, I want you to speak on Casey specifically and where you believe he got his visions. And I'll let you speak on that first.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not wincing. I mean, you know, I've spoken to very many mediums and psychics in my life. I certainly have a couple of stories about it if you want to hear it.
Yes, please. Yeah.
I actually have a good friend who is president of a society of mediums, of spiritualists. He happened, like you, I think, to have been brought up Catholic. He does believe, as a medium, he does believe in evil spirits as well, which not all mediums do. And he also believes, however, that he as a medium is in contact with dead souls. And I'll get back to Casey in a minute.
Sure.
Now, again, it can sound like, I suppose, fundamentalist or something to regard much of this stuff as demonic. But number one, you do have to realize that, as you may well do, that, for instance, in the Hebrew Bible, summoning any kind of spirits outside of, you know, praying to God is condemned in the strongest form. So the traditional Christian view has always been one should not summon spirits. So clearly, Casey was summoning spirits. He would go into a trance state. He would have knowledge revealed to him. This knowledge, in the eyes of people he was trying to help, and he seemed like sort of a slightly dim but good-hearted soul, in the eyes of the people that he would meet, and he met very prominent people, I think one of the presidents, I think George Gershwin, and these people claimed to be helped by his so-called remedies that he felt was being revealed to him by a deceased spirit. He wouldn't remember that. It had to be transcribed. That is very typical of spiritualism, that often the medium will go into a trance. Sometimes they remember it, but a lot of times they don't. That sounds to me suspiciously like a type of what I call temporary possession, that the medium has allowed himself to be taken over by a spirit. Now, who would, as a spirit, might want to confuse people? It's quite clear that Casey's remedies, remember, you're talking to a physician, from a medical point of view, were nonsense. You know, they would involve sort of what we would call magical herbs and spices and this sort of thing. From a view of mainstream science, and I am a believer in mainstream science. I believe in evolution. I believe in the Big Bang. I talked to somebody the other day. They said, well, Dr. Gallagher, the Big Bang can't be true because Genesis teaches the world was created in 7 days. And I said, you don't understand. You don't have to take the Genesis story literally. And in fact, the person who originated the Big Bang theory was a guy named George Lemaître, who was a Catholic astrophysicist. Mm-hmm. So there is a certain amount of naivete about people, including people like Edgar Cayce, because he was engaged in behavior that was directly contrary to the principles of science. Now, that doesn't mean that he couldn't have achieved some results, but the results he was achieving or the entities that were supposedly talking to him were achieving could have been much more in the realm of sort of dark magic or something. So, yes, I'm quite skeptical about Cayce. There have been thousands of people in history like Cayce. He just achieved a lot of notoriety because he got a lot of publicity and, you know, people were fascinated by his readings, which were often kind of crazy about lost city of Atlantis and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So, in fact, he's often said to be the father of the New Age because the whole New Age is very much into communing with spirits and essentially spiritualism, which has existed throughout all history. So what is the net result of mediums and spiritualists? I believe it's to confuse people. I believe it's to alienate people from traditional religion. Now, you threw in another comment. Are there spiritually gifted people?
Mm-hmm.
And I would not put Cayce in that category.
Okay.
Well, there have been holy people throughout history who have been conduits for, we would say, God's grace. Mm-hmm. And that explains, for instance, miracles, that sort of thing. I do believe there are spiritually gifted people. I think they are very rare. And I think some people who think they're gifted are not. I'll quote the Satanist woman that I talked about a little earlier before the break.
Sure.
Now, she claimed that she had a lot of psychic abilities, paranormal powers, which she did.
Mm-hmm.
And she demonstrated to me very openly. For instance, she told me how my mother had died of ovarian cancer years before, but she told a lot of people how their relatives had died. How did she know that? She claimed that she was fed that knowledge. One day she told me that she could see one of the priest exorcists from a distance. That's what the parapsychologists, which I regard as a pseudoscience, that's what they regard as a type of clairvoyance. They call it remote viewing,
mm-hmm.
being able to see people from a distance. And she described him to a T.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even though he was doing something unusual, he had gone to a beach and was saying his prayers. She described exactly what he was doing, exactly what he was wearing, and she was 100 miles away. And I called the guy, and he verified everything. He said that woman is something else, isn't she? I'm giving an example of her powers because I asked her once, you know, where she got her powers. And she said, there are no gifted people. I said, well, what do you mean? She goes, everybody gets their gifts from somewhere. She goes, I get my gifts from Satan. And I'm grateful for Satan. In fact, she was kind of confused about Satan, which is partially why she never broke from the cult. She said, other people, I understand, may get gifts from this God you believe in. I don't know about him. I do know that Satan has helped me in my life. Now, I obviously tried to disabuse her of that notion. Again, talk about a Faustian bargain, right? Because this right. woman had gotten herself possessed as well.
Mm-hmm.
So she
mm-hmm.
was paying a price for the gifts. But she felt in line with what I had described before as the two major spiritual explanations for what we call the paranormal. The paranormal tends to be an attempt, a modern attempt, often by secular people, to explain what used to be called spiritual. And there are two spiritual realms, the preternatural and the supernatural. And so my view, Tim, with all due respect, is that people get these gifts and sometimes hidden knowledge, which I believe Casey did receive some kind of communications. I believe in those cases, they're getting it from a dark source, not from a benign source.
I want to throw a little curveball at you here, if you don't mind me doing so.
Not at all.
I want to
fire away.
I want to specifically throw the curveball when it comes to this young lady we're talking about from Satanism. You mentioned remote viewing. She said she got that dark gift from Satan. The CIA has been teaching remote viewing for years and claims that you don't need any special gift to do it at all. In fact, they teach classes on remote viewing at your local learning tree centers and at your local community college if you want to enroll in those classes. And they claim that it's not a psychic gift, that it's just like an instinctual gift. It's like using your instinct if you're out in the wild. What do you say to that? Or how do you connect that to...
First of all, Tim, do you believe everything the CIA says? But leaving aside that issue, I think that, yes, people try to do kind of experiments on things, but I don't think that... first of all, I don't think that ability is as widespread as you're claiming. Number two, I don't think that's really an explanation for them to think that they can somehow train people in remote viewing. They're obviously dealing with some ability that is beyond their full understanding, okay. And they could be tapping into a darker realm without knowing it. And that's. In fact, if it's as nearly as widespread as you're implying, which I don't think it really is, I don't think that those experiments prove anything that contradicts what I've been saying.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
I mean, I will say to you one other comment.
Sure.
And again, it certainly demonstrates my Catholic beliefs. The president of the International Association of Exorcists, of which I'm the longest standing American member as a scientific advisor, he teaches very clearly that, so this is not just Dr. Gallagher's singular view.
Sure.
He teaches very clearly that parapsychology is a pseudoscience. It deals with forces that traditional errors would ascribe to either the supernatural or the diabolic. And number two, that he argues very strongly that it has never been scientifically shown that human beings alone have those psychic abilities. Take it for what it's worth. That's his opinion, but it's also mine.
So again, I'm going to push this a little further with you then. What kind of credence do you give to scientists that bring paranormal studies into the lab? Because that now we have quantum scientists who bring things into the lab that study things such as, is heaven really a quantum realm and things like that? How do you, I mean, I'm just asking you as both a Catholic and as a scientist, how do you reconcile that within your own faith?
Well, we could talk about quantum mechanics for a long time. I think it's sometimes used as a kind of false backup to some of these theories. I don't think these theories of paranormal abilities have much to do with quantum mechanics, quite frankly. Number two, as you know, there have been attempts in academic circles to study parapsychology, but it's a very controversial field.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the leading experts, like Dr. Ryan, for instance, were also credibly accused of some fraud. And it's very hard to to pin this stuff down and to do experiments. It reminds me a little bit of what people ask me when they say, when I report that people historically in exorcisms have observed all kinds of things that fly in the face of normal science. For instance, even that Satanist woman, eight people, I've been to many exorcisms, but not to hers. Eight people reported to me that she levitated for a half an hour. Mm-hmm. And I've heard from approximately 35 people in my life, including a European professor, that they have observed exorcisms themselves. So how does one understand this? Well, this clearly goes beyond material science, and it goes beyond what I think can be studied in a lab. And people say to me, well, why don't people videotape that? Which is a very naive viewpoint, as if these demons are going to perform for the camera.
Right.
And if you think about it, Tim, it's paradoxical, because on the one hand, C.S. Lewis, who was no mean student of this whole subject, used to point out this paradox himself. On the one hand, these demons seem to want to scare and demonstrate their powers to a select few people.
Mm-hmm.
Only so far as allowed by God, by the way, because God is much more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, especially in the modern age, perhaps, they spend more effort trying to convince people that they don't exist. So they're not about to perform for the camera.
Yeah.
I remember an enthusiastic young investigator said to me, you know, Dr. Gallagher, I did this videotape, and I want to show you, it dramatically proves the demonic entity. And he showed me the videotape, but the videotape was blank. And it is widely believed, I mean, I've had interference with my own phone. Almost every exorcist I've talked to mm-hmm. has claimed some minor harassing interference, say, with their computer. They have some power over material reality. And so they're not about to allow videotape evidence proving their existence. Even if you had it, you know, people would say, well, these videotapes are doctored or something.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always going to be this debate about the reality of these phenomena. I would say, you know, don't blame me or these exorcists or even the paranormal investigators, blame God. God gives us the evidence that he wants to give us. He could work miracles all over the place. And many of us Christians believe he resurrected before, and there were 500 witnesses, according to St. Paul. So he gives a certain amount of evidence. But as the great mathematician and student of religious history, Pascal, said, it was his view, which can sound, I suppose, a little arrogant. I don't think he meant it that way. God gives us evidence for the reasonable person to validate the credibility of religious truth, but he doesn't give so much evidence that it convinces everybody. And that's what I tend to believe.
Wouldn't it be so much easier, though, to give everyone the evidence just once and the horrifying evidence so that you would never be tempted? Wouldn't it be that much easier?
You know, again, you can ask that question of God someday, why he doesn't do that. But clearly,
very true.
I make the analogy every year, or every other year. In fact, I'm going to address the assembly north of Rome this September. I go to a meeting with 500 Catholic exorcists all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they all have stories like my own. Now, because they're priests, sometimes people don't believe them, even though they've written books. And I draw a precise analogy to St. Paul's comments in Corinthians, if you can allow me to make a religious reference.
Yeah, please.
St. Paul said, look, when he was preaching to the Corinthians, which is, I suppose, a little bit like going from Indianapolis and preaching in San Francisco, and he said to them, you don't have to believe me that I saw the risen Jesus. 500 people he appeared to 500 people. Those people are still alive. You can interview them. I say the same thing. I wrote a book. I was challenged, including after a Washington Post article, to provide evidence. I provided evidence. You can believe me or not, but don't kid yourself. I'm hardly the only person in the world who writes about these things. And in fact, I know quite a few doctors who believe exactly what I do and encourage me to write the book just because they have less experience with this field. People also get confused about science. Again, I'm committed to science. Mm-hmm. I couldn't be an academic doctor and a practicing physician unless I benefited from the fruits of science, from lab studies and this sort of thing.
Right.
And that's based on the scientific method, which has a technical term, methodological naturalism, assuming that is that you can study certain things using materialistic principles. But that's not all our knowledge. In fact, the word science, which originally means knowledge, encompasses a lot of other things. You know, we have knowledge about people who we love in our life and people that we are friends with. We have genuine knowledge. Most of our knowledge is historical. And so what I write about in the book and what is the basis for most religious truths is it's based on historical knowledge. Now, that knowledge has to be credible. That observations have to be verified. But I think that's perfectly possible in this type of field. Why do we believe Washington crossed the Delaware? Well, a lot of people testified later that that's exactly what happened, and Washington himself talked about it. Is that knowledge? Well, it's a type of knowledge. Is it scientific? Well, it's not anti-scientific. So a lot of the knowledge base of what I write about and what other people who in this field write about is a type of knowledge. It's just historical knowledge. Now, unfortunately, there are also some people who write these books and they just make things up. So I understand that sometimes it's hard for the general public to distinguish what's true and what's sort of made up just to sell a book. I can assure you, I'm not that materialistic a person. I did not write this book to make money. I wrote this book because I was challenged to provide the evidence, and I thought it was a public service to do so.
Understandable. Dr. Gallagher, when it comes to the subject, I understand what you're up against. There's a lot of people, and it's a sexy subject with a lot of people, but there's a lot of people, I think, these days that want to push back. I want to ask you a specific question. Don't take offense to it.
No offense, Tim. You're an intelligent guy. Ask whatever questions you want. I told you that before the show.
I'm going to ask this from a listener perspective, and this is going to seem kind of weird. It's going to seem bizarre, I know. I get a lot of pushback sometimes on these programs because I'm presenting a sexy subject in demons, but the minute I want to bring up the subject of God, people push back. Okay? And I'm hoping you're catching what I'm throwing out here. And the question I want to ask you, Dr. Gallagher, is why is it that people want to hear the subject of demon and get allured by the subject of a demon, but the minute I want to bring up God, they go, ooh, no, that's all right. I don't know that I want to buy what you're selling. Why is it that it's okay to hear about the dark side of things, but the minute you might bring up a quote about St. Paul or the Corinthians, they might want to shy away from their podcast?
Well, number one, you know, there's a lot of ignorance about religion, okay? Mm-hmm. Number two, you're talking about a subset of the population because you realize that most Americans do believe in God, and most people throughout history have always had some notion of the divine, even if it's not exactly compatible with, you know, modern religious truths. I mean, there's no question that the idea of God, especially a God of some judgment, a God who backs up, you know, certain types of morality, is threatening to a lot of people. And people feel hostile to the idea of religion and God. I mean, Jesus Christ himself said, you know, there are people who will hate me and will hate you. But I think you're talking, of only a certain minority part of the population who has that strong a reaction. Now, it may be people who are legitimately searching, and people in your audience are searchers. Mm-hmm. And maybe they have had bad experience growing up with the church. There have been abusive experiences by clergy, for instance. So there is understandably some skepticism or hostility about mainstream religion. But of course, you don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. And there's a lot of good in history done by organized religion as well. And, you know, I tend to believe it's been a positive force, but that's a hard sell to certain people. That's how I would answer your question.
It's a good answer, but how do you bring those people around and let them see that there's not bad in the other side of that equation, that there's not bad in God?
Well, again, it's a hard sell, and there are always going to be people who are not convinced no matter what you say. I mean, what I do is I tell the truth as I see it. I don't care who believes it or doesn't in a way, but I'm trying to present a rational, evidential base for my beliefs. And if people are open-minded, I think that they may be intrigued by that. I've had many, many people. I have a very good friend who was brought up Jewish. And, I don't go around talking about this even with all my friends, you know, So unless it comes up as a topic. And he called me after finding the book. He said, Rich, he's a physician, by the way, out west. He said, Rich, how come you never talked to me about this? I said, Cliff is his name. I said, well, Cliff, you know, I don't go around, you know, shooting off my mouth with everybody about this. I usually expect an invitation of some sort. And I said, what did you think of the book? And he said, I can tell you, Rich, after reading this book, no intelligent person can say that a scientifically trained person hasn't presented a very good case that evil spirits exist. And that's why I wrote the book. I write the book and, you know, I leave it up to God. It's up to people what they make of this evidence or not. But, you know, people should, I would not kid myself about two things. Number one, there is a lot of evidence for religious truth, number one. And it's a complex subject, but there is a lot of evidence, as Pascal himself emphasized. And number two, don't kid yourself. Not everybody wants to believe in God. You know, a lot of people would rather not believe in God. And that is probably the main reason why some people don't.
Let's expound on that a little bit. Now, you brought up earlier that there are some psychics and some mediums that go out there, and I'll twist it a little bit here, Dr. Gallagher, and I'll say, you know, there are some psychics and mediums that say, well, you know, I go out there into the astral plane, I search, I don't see any such thing as an evil spirit. How do you impress on them that that's not the case? Because I know, and you know, that I've seen it for myself. I've sat and watched an entire vial of holy water dissipate in front of my very eyes. I've smelled sulfur. I know that sulfuric smell. I know for a fact, as I'm sitting here with you, Dr. Gallagher, I know there's such a thing as evil. I know it, and you know it.
Yeah, well, again, you're underscoring, you know, the point that no matter how good the evidence is, some people are just never going to believe it. People have to be very careful of validating their view of the cosmos by personal odd experiences. You know, you were talking about things like astral projections. I, as a physician, have dealt with a lot of people who have had problems with drugs and had all kinds of hallucinogenic experiences. So it's very dicey to take those individual experiences and say, I know better than you because, you know, I've experienced blah, blah, blah. None of those weird experiences disprove anything that we've talked about today.
I don't know. I mean, it's, and the other thing too is what it, and again, this is maybe just my opinion. I don't throw my opinion out there very often. In 17 years, I think I've maybe thrown my opinion out there a handful of times, but there's only one solution once you're more than knee deep in it, maybe chest deep in it, and you're oppressed and bordering on possession. There's only one solution that's going to get you out of it, isn't there?
Well, that's my view, and it underscores another important point that exorcisms, Tim, are not magic. In other words, the exorcist is not a witch doctor. First of all, he's not the one who says this is going to be the result. He's praying to our Lord. He believes that God and our Lord will deliver the person. But he's making another point, too, which is that the person, the individual victim, and they are victims, the individual victim has to work at it. Mm-hmm. In other words, they have to develop themselves spiritually.
Yeah.
What is the difference between this Julia woman who refused to leave the satanic cult? I mean, she was not going to be delivered, and she wasn't delivered, mm-hmm. despite having had several exorcisms, which were attempts to weaken the demons. Another guy I mentioned in the book was the guy called Juan, who was a drug lord, and he had turned to a dark Mexican cult called Santa Muerte, and he sort of prayed to Satan, he told me that would make him a very successful criminal, and that he could have all the cars and all the women he ever wanted. And that succeeded for a while. Again, Faustian bargain. Mm-hmm. Eventually, he was caught by the police. He was sent to prison. The prison chaplain appropriately discerned that he was possessed. But he changed his whole life. He turned back to the Catholicism of his youth. He got exorcisms, and he was eventually delivered because he reformed his life and he renounced his past criminal behavior. That's what you have to do. And, you know, the proof of the pudding is, when people do that, sometimes it can take a long time, but when people do that, then the results tend to be successful.
That indeed. The book is called Demonic Foes, My 25 Years as a Psychiatrist Investigating Possessions, Diabolic Attacks, and the Paranormal. Dr. Gallagher, did you have a last note you wanted to add here?
Well, in a way, I wanted to emphasize that pastoral point, because people will think that exorcisms is magic. It's not magic. The person has to work for it. But also that this whole field has a lot more rigor to it than some people think. And people sometimes say to me, how come only Christians are possessed? Nothing could be further from the truth. Mm-hmm. People in other cultures and pagan cultures are actually possessed much more often. And people without any religious belief are more lost because they don't know who to turn to. So again, you know, I wrote the book to educate people about this complex field. And my job as a physician is simply to help people. I am a professor, so I'm interested in trying to educate people about this subject. And, you know, I'll leave it up to people who read the book to say whether I succeeded in my goal.
All right. The book is out now. We have a link to it in the description of this program. Demonic Foes, My 25 Years as a Psychiatrist Investigating Possessions, Diabolic Attacks, and the Paranormal. Dr. Richard Gallagher has been our guest. Thank you so much, Dr. Gallagher, for being with us.
Well, you're very welcome, and thank you for a thoughtful interview.
Thank you. Folks, thank you so much for joining us for another great week of Darkness Radio. We appreciate you being here for another great week of Darkness Radio, being a dedicated listener of Darkness Radio and being part of our family here on Darkness Radio. We appreciate you so much. Myself, Bruiser, Jessica Freeberg, and Mally Fox. We'll be back again next week with another great week of Darkness Radio. We want to also thank our sponsors. We want to thank Manscaped. We want to thank Blue Chew. We want to thank HelloFresh. And we want to thank Microdose Gummies. By the way, if you would patronize our sponsors, go out and support them because they support us and keep us on the air. We would greatly appreciate it. Also want to remind you to take care of yourself and each other. We are coming into spring. It is warming up a little bit, but also with the spring melt, people are going to need some help out there. Whether you help monetarily, whether you help with somebody with their home, maybe they need some help around the house. Just help somebody out. Take a little bit of your time, maybe a little bit of cash, whatever you got. Help somebody out this weekend, especially around the house. You may have some disabled neighbors or some elderly neighbors that need some help around the house. Just take a little bit of time and help your neighbor. Let's leave this place a little bit better than we found it. Just a little note from your buddies here at Darkness Radio. I feel incredibly blessed every day to be here with you guys again. I got a little bit of a second chance at life with this heart surgery, and I really just thank you guys for being with us each and every week. Want to say happy birthday to my nephew, Tyler, before we go. Tyler's birthday was the 29th. He turned 22 years old, and speaking of helping out and helping people, Tyler's helped me so much over the last few years as I've been recuperating with things, and you want to talk about a kid who is unselfish and has been checking in on me and just helping me at every turn, even when, I mean, just at the right time. He just knows when to call, when to text, when to pop in and help out his old Uncle Timmy. Man, Tyler, I love you so much, kid. But happy 22nd birthday. He's going to be getting married here in the next year or so. I'm so, so proud of him. So happy birthday, Ty. Your Uncle Timmy loves you, kid. That's it, kid. That's it, kids. That's it. Go have fun this weekend. We'll see you next week on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.